We have a thing in the martial arts, mind, body, and spirit, the three essential core components of you. But you need to be able to break that down further. You need to break it down into parts of your life you can address, set goals for, and really focus on it. You have to be able to, the more concrete, more clear you can make something in your mind, the more likely it will become reality. Something that should be very reassuring to you. Look around you. All of this here, everything, this iPad, that table, the mug, the hat, everything in your world was first a thought in somebody's head. It was all started up in somebody's head. Okay? And that's the way your life becomes.
I mean, to me, when I think of lifestyle, I think I kind of focus more on the kind of social aspects of it and how it's related to the kind of girls that you can get or, you know, just that or the other. So when I think of lifestyle, I think, first of all, your lifestyle is basically the way you live, right? So right now, most of you guys probably don't have the most attractive lifestyle. Just when we generally start this stuff, the guys who find this stuff generally are more introverted, more kind of work-centered. They kind of maybe have lost or disconnected with a lot of friends. Usually don't have huge social circles. So when you're starting from the beginning, you're thinking of lifestyle in terms of the places you go, the people you hang out with, the things you do, and the types of like events and stuff you do, right? The things you surround yourself with. So the first thing I think you want to figure out with your lifestyle is you kind of want to figure out what kind of girls you want, because your lifestyle affects the quality of girls and how easy it's going to be to get them. Your skill set affects basically your quantity. The better you are at skill set, the more girls you can get. The better you are at lifestyle, the hotter girls you can get and the easier it's going to be. So you want to figure out what kind of girls you want. Like, if obviously if you want club girls, you're going to have to live a lifestyle where you're going out to clubs a lot, where you're friends with club people, where you infiltrate club social circles, right? If you want, you know, more kind of spiritual girls, you know, obviously you're going to have to go to kind of Eckhart Tolle conferences and, you know, stuff like that. So just be aware of what you're looking for and whether or not your lifestyle syncs up for it. For me, my big, like, I gotta change my lifestyle moment, I had a couple of them. My first one was when I stopped dating strippers in 2006. I was just like, girls I'm dating, the situations I'm putting myself in, not really bringing me where I need to be. And the second one was recently when I stopped going out to bars and clubs. Like, now I just meet girls during the daytime, because in my opinion, for the girls I like today, like, I like smarter girls. I like girls who have real jobs, and I'm not really into club people, so. For me, like, the daytime is a better situation. I go to things I like, you know, I meet girls at concerts, I meet girls at art galleries, stuff like that. So that's kind of where you want to be. The more you can kind of figure out what you can do that you already like doing, that you can meet girls in, the better your lifestyle is going to be. Like, you don't really want to force a lifestyle that you hate, which brings me to my second point, which is stop doing shit you hate. That's a huge point for lifestyle. People think that crafting a lifestyle is about like bringing things into your life. In my opinion, having a happy lifestyle is more about taking things out of your life that stress you out, that annoy you, that you don't like. A lot of guys do things they hate because they think that there's some like magical payoff at the end, right? Like the leprechaun with the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. They think like, if I keep going to clubs, even though I hate it, even though like I have to get drunk to be around these people, like, eventually there'll be a payoff. There's not gonna be a payoff. If you hate doing certain things now, chances are 4 years from now, regardless of your success level with women, you're still gonna hate doing the same things. Activities are generally not an acquired taste. So, especially social ones. Like, we tend to know what we like to do socially. So don't kind of force things, and look for avenues that are social that are also closely linked to things you like to do. Music, you know, theater, like a lot of people have different hobbies. There's a lot of things you can do with these hobbies. There's a lot of conferences that women go to. There's a lot of ways to meet women outside of bars and clubs that if you just put a little bit of thinking outside the box into, I know it's hard for some of us, you'll be able to see some good results from that. So those are my first 2 points.
Yeah, the part about, I forgot to start the point. The places you go and the things that you're interested in being kind of like a congruent element in your lifestyle can't be ignored, nor can like the people you hang out with. That's how peer influence. friends, and you average your income, and you know what you get?
Your own.
Your own, pretty much, right? Your attitudes, you can do the same thing with attitude. You can do a lot of different elements of the people you hang out with. There's a lot of different schools of thought about how to handle this sort of thing, you know, it's, okay, to ditch those people that are holding you back, or no, don't ditch those people. I like to take a more moderate version of this. You need to hang around people that are going to enable the lifestyle you want. It's just an absolute must. You have to be able to hang around with people that are going to help you get what you want. Because your peer influence is one of the most important things. Was it another Tony Robbins quote is that you will only be successful to the, I can't remember the exact quote, but it's, you'll only be successful to the level of what your peer group will let you. All right? They have a distinct influence on you and your expectations of yourself and what you can do. So if you want to, here's a little technique, if you will, of improving your peer group, just add on one person of a higher echelon peer group to start influencing you to get you into a better mindset. Whether it's another PUA you're hanging out with that's got better skill or is, you know, more forward thinking, whether it's a businessman. My life just improves dramatically when I do that. I start to add people into my life, my social circle, that make me think different, make me do things differently, or just take a different perspective. And some of the people that are kind of at the low chain of people that I kind of have these tag-alongs in my social world, my alpha lifestyle, they just kind of fall by the wayside naturally. That influence just disappears. And that's the part you do, what John says, when you get rid of that negative holding back influence, and nothing does that worse to you than your peers.
Yeah, can I add a holding back?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so the first thing I would say is, in general, when you're trying to improve your life, you want to stay away from negative people. I'm going to be a little more harsh than Carlos was. People who are negative and are heading towards the negative, you definitely want to avoid. If you have friends who are already negative and they seem to be getting more and more negative, those are not people you want to be around. Now, if someone's negative but they seem to be trying to head towards the positive, that's the kind of person that maybe you can hang around. But like negative people who are like stuck or are heading towards more negativity, it's just going to cause chaos. Like, I used to make friends with like pickup artist people and then just get sucked into their chaos. Like, don't do it. You want to hang out with people who are heading towards the positive. So people who are negative right now, that are like trying to move forward and like get positive, those people are good. People who are positive, heading towards the positive, good. Stay away from positive people who are turning negative too. You don't want to be there for that. The other thing I would say is when you're trying to add people who are better than you, you have to bring something to the table. A lot of guys make this mistake. A lot of guys do it with me. You know, random guys will email me and be like, man, I love your blog post. You know, the next time I'm in LA, I'd love to meet up and like pick your brain. I'm like, why would I want to do that? What do I get out of this equation? Right? I'm like, hey man, cool. Coaching is $500 an hour. Feel free to let me know how many hours of in-person you want. A lot of times guys think that if they meet like a really cool guy and they just like ask him to teach them, that he's gonna be like, it's gonna be like a Disney movie or something, and he's gonna like take you under his wing and like show you how all this stuff works. Cool people generally don't hang out with people who are less cool or less connected to them, unless you're bringing something to the table. So if you're trying to make friends with a natural, or you're trying to make friends with a club promoter, or you know, an owner of a restaurant, or a rich guy who throws really good parties, don't think about what you're going to get out of it first. Think about what you can bring to the table first to make them want to hang out with you. That's going to help you make friends with these cooler people. That took me a really long time to learn. Because you think it would just be easy and you just like you can make friends with cooler people really easily. But in general, like, this is my problem with like social circle systems for a lot of pickup artists, right? They're like, yeah, you just go in there and you like befriend the promoter. I'm like, you've been to a good club? Everyone's trying to befriend the promoter. Like, you're not the only person who thought, maybe I'll hang out with the promoter so I can get access to some of those chicks he knows. Right? So, think about what you can bring to the table. If you're talking about nightclub people, there's two currencies in nightclub. One of them is women, and the other is money. That's really the only ways you're bringing value to the nightclub industry. So, if you're not bringing girls, or you're not somehow bringing the money. Now, for promoters, my roommate's a club promoter at a lot of the best clubs in Hollywood, so I'll tell you some things for like befriending promoters. You have to bring girls. Like, if you want to even think about being friends with a promoter, you can't be a guy who shows up alone. Like, my roommate is really hooked up because we both live with a promoter, and he always goes to the club alone, and it takes him half an hour to get in, even though everybody knows him. I always go with girls, and I walk right in. Like, there's a big difference there. Like, the nightclub currency is girls. So if you have to meet girls online and bring them to the club and they're not the most attractive girls, that is a better situation than going alone and trying to friend the promoter.
Yeah, you guys are probably sensitive to the underlying current in what we're talking about, especially what John was talking about. The whole, remember I said yesterday about the leading with the giving hand, not the taking hand?
Yep.
It applies in every element of your social interactions and every part of your business interactions, right? When you come in there with that overwhelming black hole of need, people sense that shit and they don't want to deal with you. Think about all the people in your life that have done that to you. The kid at the playground that comes up to you, don't need you, give you shit all the time, right? Oh, come on, be my friend. That's how we can come across when you're not finding something to add to the equation. I call this being charged versus not being charged, right? Having a charge to you as opposed to being somebody that's constantly in a state of, oh, plugging into the wall, I just don't have enough energy to give to anybody. Does that make sense? So, and I found the exact same thing, by the way, the whole club thing. It's really funny because when I was trying to organize boot camps and venues to take them to, I'd come in there and say, look, I got a bunch of guys that want to come in and, I'm trying to get them to the owners and managers to be amenable to this, and they cut us some kind of break, but, you know, honestly, they don't care. They only care about the money and the girls. So bringing guys in is no big deal. Guys come in all the fucking time, especially now I'm bringing in guys that are doing this, you know, they're not that unmotivated. And then I start bringing the equation, well, these guys are going to spend a lot of money on, you know, food and drinks and stuff like that. No, then I start to light up a little bit, but they're still never that amenable. I want to talk about one thing really important here. How many guys are doing, I don't want to say exclusive, but raise your hand when you're using one of these techniques to meet women. Bars and clubs, raise your hand. Okay, hands down. Online, raise your hand. Okay, hands down. Let's talk about speed dating. Speed dating and that kind of event. Okay, here. Singles events, raise your hand. Okay. I want to encourage this mindset with you guys. I stole it from a book of the obvious, closely same title. I call it Multiple Streams of Female Income. Okay? When you're thinking of money and how you invest and how you make money, you want to have diversity in your portfolio, right? You should have the exact same thing in your lifestyle in terms of how you meet women. There's a lot of reasons for this. Of utmost importance is that you're not, number one, burning yourself out on any one particular method. Because what happens is when guys go online fucking dating, what do? They just hit that thing like a mofo. They just like blast it. They get burned out because they don't get responses because they're not really using great methods. And then they're pissed and they quit and they don't do it. And now they're back in the same hole of depression and sinking anxiety. If you have multiple areas that you're using to get to meet women, any one of them is likely to come through for you, depending on your mood and what you're doing with it at the time. Because for a long time, I thought the only way you could really go out meet women was clubs. You know, it just seemed like the only logical place because, oh, that's why they're there. They're there to meet companies. It's a high target-rich environment, you know, all that shit. But after a while, you learn that having more than one place to go to is really, it's a mental health technique more than anything else. So I want you to really emphasize that. If you're only using one thing now, add on to that. You need at least three different ways of meeting women. You know, the more the merrier, as I say.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Three at least.
Yeah.
And the other thing is it compounds. Like, you meet, when you meet girls through multiple ways, like, you compound the amount of girls you can meet. Like, things, like, there's various different tracks that girls go on, right? Like, some girls you meet and it's super on and you hang out with them the next day. Some girls, you know, you're both busy or something happened and it takes a couple weeks. You know, so a lot of times these all overlap, and the more streams you have, the more you end up with, like, crazy explosive results where you sleep with a lot of girls at a time or, like, meet a really awesome girl. Because you're meeting a lot of girls all in its short time period.
Yeah, it's a weird effect. It's kind of like, I forget what they call it, but when you have all those elements just kind of combining at the same time, it's that vector of force, it's all pointing, you know, it just seems to all fall together. It's like that waterfall thing I was talking about. I want to talk about something really quick, just the whole pickup lifestyle thing and bringing it into your lifestyle. There's like this learning path we go through when we do the POA thing, right? You have that initial discovery and disbelief, right? You find something online, or I don't know how you guys found out about this. I found out about some books and just kind of got into it later on, eventually online, but you have this discovery where you're almost like, no, you kidding me? This is how I can do this? This attraction? Then you get into that and you learn some of it and you start to get a little belief. Maybe you get a few successes, try it out. Maybe it doesn't work for you, but you still have that sneaking suspicion that, yeah, this is actually much more valid than the shit I've done before. Then you get a little success, and then you get some plateaus, and then you might even have a dip. You might have a failure or two. because you're not addressing one thing. And most guys come around to this time and time again. I call this the pickup pipeline. Kind of goes to this frustration of not getting chicks, to discovery you can do it, and then a little bit of doubt, and then you go to discipline, put yourself into it, and you get maybe a little jaded, and then you realize at some point there is an inner game element to this. Okay, a lot of guys don't want to admit that until much later in the game, but that's why I call it pickup pipeline. Eventually guys come out the other end realizing there is some shit, and they're like, they got to take care of it. And it's important because this is your identity we're really working on here. And when I feel so disconnected, you're not going to be able to perpetuate it. I really want to emphasize that lifestyle is a self-perpetuating machine. Okay? It can be difficult to escape as well as it can be difficult to create. And chances are your lifestyle, where you're at right now, and I'm just making broad assumptions here. I really, you know, I assume a lot, but I have to, but you guys are probably not, maybe not the most optimized lifestyle for what you're trying to accomplish. So you really have to think about that all these elements pull together into something that is, it's a machine that you have to put in gear to get what it is you want to get. The peer influence thing we talked about, I like to really broaden the scope of what we talk about when we talk about lifestyle. I'm not putting down anything John said, by the way. I'm just saying I really go wide with this because of where I come from in terms of like self-help things. So sometimes it can be a little esoteric and you're like, oh, how the fuck do I apply financial to my, you know, my pickup? But it does. Every little bit of your life comes through in some form or another. Let me ask you this. If you're sinking knee-deep in debt, somebody's about to take away your car, and you're really suspecting he might repo it the night you're out at a bar, how effective are your pickups going to be? Right? Okay, there's any number of those little examples I could throw at you, but you know what I'm talking about. Okay? Another element that's often missed, and I'll go into this a little bit more in my my later discussion today, which I want you guys to stick around for, it's going to be some good stuff, is masculinity and how men have ignored something that, again, it sounds like something like, well, what's that? What's the whole manhood thing? But it has been. Raise your hand if you're a guy that grew up in a house where the parents got divorced. Okay, go ahead. Okay, put your hands down. It's funny, I don't usually see a high population of that, but it's interesting. So most everybody else just has their parents together. That's pretty cool. Raise your hand if you felt like you had a father that was a good male role model. Good, excellent. Put your hands down. Again, that's a higher ratio than normal. Most guys don't. Most guys don't have that. I got lucky. I don't know about you. I got really lucky with my dad. He was just, but he was also a son of a bitch. He was a terror. He was schizophrenic, and he made my life hell for most of my childhood life. And I had to kind of reconcile that.
What's that?
I'm going to do a comment on all family questions.
Okay. Well, you know, that's the thing. My mom was very passive. My father was overly aggressive. But I did learn a lot from it. So I kind of reconciled that thing. But a lot of guys don't have that male role model. They don't know. They don't see a guy that can attract women the healthy way or know how that really works. So that's really important. So I'll talk about more masculinity elements later on. Things like rites of passage and things like that that guys just don't have these days. It might sound a little bit fight clubbish, but you know, whatever. Getting perspective on your lifestyle is really important. Being able to have perspective on any element of your life. This is what you're getting today, by the way, a lot, or actually this whole weekend, is perspective. Kind of like an outside viewpoint that you don't normally get on your own. You can't always step outside yourself and go, man, hey, that ain't right, or see yourself the way other people see you. So perspective is really, really important. And the ability to remember that none of anything sticks. This is an attitudinal thing that's helped with my lifestyle in every aspect of the supply to pick up and meet. It's important there. Is that nothing sticks. The present moment that we try and focus on so much, hang on, wait a minute. Oh, there's a present moment. Oh, it's gone. Hold on, there's another one coming up. Oh, no, that one's gone now too. We spend most of our lives worrying about shit in the future and dwelling on things in the past, right? And the present moment really doesn't even exist. But it's still something we have to be very focused on. And we also have to have that perspective of knowing what it is we're doing in the present moment.
Self-help trap, yes, the self-help trap. That one is a killer. The reason it's a killer is the more you become aware of all the things there are to work on, the more it can drag your self-esteem down. Right? You ever experienced that? You start to figure out that I can fix these things, and you start to realize, oh, you go into self-analysis mode, and you realize, oh, I can fix that. I can also fix that, and that, and that. Oh, I need to work on this, and this, and this, and this, and this. Those things compound and they can really drag your attitude down. So be careful about that. Be very focused about what you're working on, improving on. choose one or two things. I don't even think one or two sometimes. At the most three, but if you can get it down to one, much better. It's the same problem that some guys have when they set too many goals. You're all over the place. Multitasking, worst habit in the world. Worst thing for you to do is to be a multitasker anywhere, at work, at home, anywhere, because you can never fully engage on anything. Read The Power of Full Engagement by Tony Schwartz, I think. Power of Full Engagement talks about this. I can sum it up for you. The basic fact is that you can only really apply yourself and get results when you're focused on one task. And the book talks about how to do that. You got to learn that focus and that ability. That's where success comes from, not being able to do many things at the same time. It's a common cultural misperception. So when it comes to self-help, the more you see, the worse you feel about yourself. And the fourth trap, information addiction. Raise your hand if you've ever suffered from this one. Right? Everybody here probably has at some point or another, especially if you've gone onto a pickup forum, if you bought products. Products are great. Don't get me wrong. Hey, I sell products. But at the same time, keep them in perspective, what role they're supposed to fulfill for you, not just getting them to have them. You want to know the honest to God truth? In a lot of ways, most people, like I was watching the information, or one of those marketing channels where they're showing the abdominizer and they had Cindy Crawford's age thing. Oh, they came up with something great. Marketing guys would love this. They called it the youth molecule. I heard that and I was like, oh, that's genius. You know, they made this thing that's scientific and yet what every woman wants, all in one little phrase. I was like, oh, that's brilliant. But information addiction, we feel better just by being here. I mean, let me ask you this. Why are you here? Why are you here right now in this room to this weekend? I mean, couldn't you have learned this stuff at home? Really? Couldn't you have learned most of what we've taught here? I'm not saying there wasn't any value in coming. Believe me, there is a lot, and I'm getting to that in a second. The fact that you're not in your bedroom reading this stuff on a computer is 90% of it, honestly. You're around other people with a like mind. This is what's known as the mastermind effect in a lot of ways. And hopefully you guys have been sharing and collaborating in the same way. Napoleon Hill talks about that in his book, Think and Grow Rich, right? Think about it now. What are you doing in your life that you know, what is it you're not doing in your life that you know damn well that you need to? Education can often give you the illusion of improving your inner game. Just learning about something can make you think you're working on inner game, but you're really not. You're educating and you're having epiphanies. This is what I call the therapy trap. You're in therapy, she comes up with some cool realization about you, or he, and you're like, oh, that's why I'm fucked up. And is that really accomplishment? Well, maybe, but honestly, you get addicted to that finding out stuff about your past. A lot of people find this to be true, by the way. They go into therapy and they just get addicted to the process of finding out what's all fucked up about them from their childhood. And every time they come into one of those realizations, they think the therapy was like, oh, that's paying off, man. But they're not changing. They're just finding out why. They're not getting plans. They're not getting put into gear. Moods. We talked about this. I'm going to review a little bit, but in a good mood, everything's great. In a bad mood, everything sucks. If you can recognize that mood when it hits you, you're going to go a long way towards self-realization and stopping yourself from doing things that self-sabotage. Because you'll forget that you're in a bad mood. You'll go out in a bad mood. You'll start starting conversations, or you'll feel blah, and your moods will be, you'll be negative. You'll be the down guy. You won't get results. You see how that just spirals down? And all it took was you going, I'm in a bad mood. Perhaps going out and just doing pickup is not the best idea tonight. Maybe I should find like a wing girl or somebody that can bring my mood up a little bit, or be like an assist on this one. Think about that. Okay, I'm going to give you my four-step panic management tool. This is one of the best tools I've ever heard of that'll help you. And it's not just panic, it's just like any state of anxiety you may run into. All right? This is four steps. Number one, I'm, by the way, compressing a previously established thing. They have a whole book on this, pretty much this whole process. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but I'm giving you my modified version because it's better. Yeah. Number one of the steps is react. Let yourself react. Let yourself have that moment of, oh, shit. You got to let yourself have it. You can't get past that part of it. Let it happen. Let it flow through you, because it's a moment that your lizard brain has to let you experience. Make sense? Number two is release it. Let it go. The release phase is where you're saying, oh, my God, this is a crazy situation. This always happens to me. It's that exasperated sigh you have. After the panic has passed, you let it go. You're like, oh, this shit always happens to me. It's just, oh. And then, number three is recenter and refocus. Okay, this is kind of like the back upswing. The first part was like you're on this down, you feel like you're on a downhill slope, but you stop yourself by letting it go. Remember, let it go, probably the most important thing you can do. Number three, recentering is where you say, oh, geez, okay, all right, you know what? It's not that bad. I can probably handle it. I can get through this, it's not gonna be fun, but I can deal with it. I'm not gonna let this ruin my life, my day, whatever, okay? You see how we're starting to get it to kind of recover a little bit now? And the fourth is re-engage. Get back into it again. This is really important because a lot of people kind of cut this process short. They do some of it naturally, but they forget to re-engage. Re-engage is where you say, I'm ready to fix this and I'm ready to move on. I'm ready to get my shit going. The reason most people can't control their emotions is because you guys have heard the amygdala. I don't know how they pronounce that, but you know. It's a part of your brain that will actually shut off the rest of your brain during a stress hijack. It's supposed to, because if something happens that threatens you, that could kill you, you can't afford to think. You just have to act. Asteroid coming down, about to hit you in the head. Why is this happening? No, you gotta jump and move. You gotta run, you get the fuck out of Dodge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, the screaming syndrome from movies. So when you put words to your emotions, your brain cools off really quickly, and it will allow you to get back to solutions very, very fast. But you have to let the panic pass. That was the first react and release. And then the recenter and refocus lets you get back in cognitive thinking again. You let your lizard brain cool off, the rest of your brain picks up. Does that sound understandable? I'm keeping this really, really simple because it's not very complicated, and it works. Once you've done this a few times, and it doesn't take very many times, you become habituated to this, and it happens automatically. It's another one. Okay, let's use it. Uncomfortable silence. What happens? You panic, right? There's the panic, the, oh shit, it's gonna happen, oh my hand. What's number two? Release, let it go. Because the more you sit there in the panic mode of, I don't have anything to say. Are you really gonna think of anything to say by thinking about what you don't have to say? It's never gonna happen. So let it go, be like, all right, and even if the pause has happened, it's already happened, so no sense focusing on that, let it go. Recenter and refocus would be what? Okay, I can come up with something to say here. Oh, wait a minute, Carl said that cool technique, what was his? Oh yeah, hey, that was our first uncomfortable silence. We survived, cool. Okay, so now you can fall back on learned mechanisms, but you can't when you're in panic. Your brain literally won't let you. That's why approach anxiety is so painful. That's why you get into these I can't think of what to say. I was talking to some other guy about this. I was assessed by the Sheehan of our system, the 8th degree, and I choked on the signature form of our art. And I practiced that form probably more than anything, and it was just such a, it was a horrible experience. It's hard for me to admit it right now, honestly, because I practice a lot, and messing up that form killed me. And I got to that point really quick. I didn't use this. I didn't use this, which would have been better. I forgot which way I was supposed to turn, because I do a 270 and a spiral and upholding hand, and then I do this other stuff, and I couldn't think of it. And he's like trying to help me and guide me. And everybody, you know, if you guys are in martial arts, you know how this works. Everybody in a martial arts class wants to help you. Yeah, they're all telling me, like, this is going to help. Guys, shut up. I can, you know. And he's like, do you know this form? And that was the killer there. I was like, oh, shit. Yes, I do, sir, but I obviously just can't prove that to you. So it was one of those moments that I would love to have remembered this, and I did. And now I'm being reminded that I need to get back to using it. The key step is to identify the emotion, because if you can't do that, the emotion will own you. You understand that? The emotion owns you instead of the other way around. Okay, thought control. Ultimately, all success and happiness in life comes from controlling and having a healthy relationship to your own thinking. The only real key I've ever found, and it's the one that I think is probably the time-tested true one, again, can come across a little new agey and a little, I don't know, I don't care. Meditation. It really is. You know what meditation is? I talked about this before. Meditation is what? Controlling your thoughts. That's all it is. It's taking conscious control that you can steer your own thinking. Okay, the breathing part is something to focus on, to give your mind something to focus on. All meditation usually is based around some sort of focus, whether it's imagining yourself at the bottom of a pond and bubbles are passing by, and or doing the backwards countdown number one. There's all sorts of tricks. They all work. Praying to God is meditation. It is. These things that we don't think of as meditation are meditations. There's meditations in everyday life. There's meditations you do when you don't even know about it. So you're already meditating. Question is, will you do it consciously? It's your willingness to observe your mind at work and grab back the steering wheel. Don't let your mind run amok, because it will. It will take you someplace you don't want to go. Three strategies of mind control for women, with women. Ooh, that was close. We are not in a seminar about mind control and hypnosis of women. Sorry if you happen to come into the wrong class at the wrong time there. Three strategies of mind control for you with women. Number one, lower women in your mind. We call this knocking them off the pedestal. Okay, consciously knock them off the pedestal. I would literally sit there in my chair at home, and I, like I said, I'm a freak about this stuff. I'd sit there in a chair and I'd imagine her sitting on the toilet, honking out the worst diarrhea of her life. How many of you can do that right now? How many of you want to? Nobody. How many can do that? Seriously, do it. Just imagine her panties and a bunch around her ankles, and she's like, because tell you what, she does. I had a girlfriend that could fart louder than anybody I knew, and it was not exactly a turn on, let me tell you. So I used that one to remind myself, women are just as crude and nasty as we are. Lower them in your mind. Number two, raise yourself in your mind. Okay? We're not talking about degrading women on one side and narcissism on the other. No, we're talking about raising and elevating your own self-image. And we've talked more than enough about that here, but you get the point on that one. It's all the self-help. It's all the things you do to kickstart the voice in your head that should be talking you into success as opposed to reminding you of all the failures. And the third strategy of mind control that you have to master, these are the three critical ones that I found, that's just really the focal ones. The third is rehearse calmness. Rehearse calmness. Make calmness something that you rehearse. So just like any actor or anything else you learn in life, like playing guitar or like anything else, it becomes natural to you and it's very easy to fall into. Because calmness is where all resourcefulness comes from. I have this thing I call Real Game, R-E-A-L. It's a double acronym. The R at the start stands for relaxed and resourceful. Relaxed and resourceful, because if you're not relaxed, you cannot draw upon all that great shit you learned or all the stuff we've been teaching you, right? I mean, John's got some great stuff for you to say. All those great lines, and you modify them and make them your own. Don't say them the way he says them. Use that stuff, but you will never be able to remember it when you're in a state of, right? You guys want me to talk about goal setting a little bit? Would that be of value to you? Yes or no? Yes? Okay, we're going to talk a little bit, because I have a very, very simple, again, simplify. There's so many ways of going about this. I know Brian Tracy, some guy was asking about classes and courses. NightingaleConnett.com has great classes and things you can get on tape. I highly recommend buying a set of DVDs. Buy Earl Nightingale. They have a set of Earl Nightingale CDs. It's his complete collection, restored stuff. He is like the godfather of getting your head in the right space. As a man, I think, especially. Yes? What's the name? Earl, E-A-R-L, Nightingale. 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 He is the godfather about this stuff. He was actually on the aft mast of the Arizona when it was hit in Pearl Harbor. And he survived, yeah. Pretty amazing, because when he tells a story, he's like matter of fact about it, and you're like, fuck, you were on that ship, dude. I saw the movie. I know what happened. He was the one that originally came out with The Secret. Only he called it The Strangest Secret. It was the only, up to that time, the only gold-selling album that was spoken word, not music. But get his stuff. Anyways, I'm off topic here. Goal setting, like Brian Tracy has a program that goes through a long step process about this. It's very simple. Typical feeling about goals is what? Ugh. Right? I mean, just be honest. Nobody really likes goal setting. It feels artificial and difficult. Goals are merely a method of visualization. They give you something to concretely focus on, because when your mind has something specific it can see, your subconscious will start to push you towards it. It will happen. It absolutely does. The law of the subconscious, which you can learn from Napoleon Hill and the whole think and grow rich thing, your subconscious mind will give you solutions while you're not thinking about shit. And it does all the time. You don't know it. Two parts of goal setting is the process of setting good goals and then the motivation and accountability to go after them, which is why you must make goals things you care about, not things you should care about, things you really do. Most people try to keep life purposefully vague. Why?
They don't want to leave their comfort zone.
They want to leave their comfort zone. What did you say? cushions you from failure. It basically takes away a lot of the accountability. You can't be held up against any kind of specific criteria or mark because you never made it in the first place. Look, I'm Mr. Slippery Guy, you know? And it's an unfortunate thing that we do that because we can do so much more when we do. But it's difficult for a lot of people. The less accountability and determination that you feel you have, the less accountability and determination that you feel you have, the more you're going to need to break your goals down into smaller steps. It's just a little rule I found is because if you try and make too grandiose goals, you get caught up in the, oh my God, that's so big, I can't do it. I'm going to come back to goals in a second because I'm going to keep going. I've got goals right together. Most men make a mistake of biting off more than they can chew. They try and jump fast forward to competency. I see this in the dojo all the time. Anybody that teaches martial arts or is in a dojo knows about this one probably. We all do it. Every guy I've ever taught has done this. I teach them a hand drill where you punch one, then with the same hand, one, two, then with the same last hand, one, two, three. I just do this drill with them, and inevitably, a guy gets the pattern, and what does he do the first thing?
One, two, three.
Speeds it up to 150,000 fucking miles an hour. Instantly, he wants to go from, I just learned it, to I am confident, and I am competent, I am the mofo at this technique. It's natural. It's just a guy's natural tendency. Be aware of that in yourself, though, because it will stop you from getting success. Because here's what happens. This is speed bump theory, and this is applicable to women. So listen. When you do that with yourself, where you try and fast forward to competency, just like in pickup, if you try and jump there, and you have those places in between where you're not getting it, it ain't happening, it ain't working for whatever reason, you create a speed bump in your brain. I call it a speed bump because you always feel it like you're going over a speed bump. And you feel that little bump of, oh, that didn't work, or, you know, and that speed bump becomes assumed. You assume it's there all the time, and you start to get anxiety about it because you know that you're not going to be able to do it. I see it happen with techniques. The guy who does the same technique again now cannot speed it up because he's anticipating he's going to fail. I mentioned this in lunch yesterday. I want to share it with everybody. Emotions, coming back to this topic of emotions, are the idiot lights on the dashboard of your life. That's the way I talk about it. Because what are they doing? What is an emotion? It's telling you something. It's a signal to you. Tony Robbins has a great section about this, I think, in his book, Awaken the Giant Within. You can go read it there. I'm not going to go through it all now. But it's really important because they tell you that something is going on. So really, use emotions for what they are. They are like idiot lights on the dashboard. They tell you there's some conflict or there's some tension or something happening that you need to address. I've got a few minutes, and what I want to know is if you guys would find benefit in talking or doing a quick hot seat. You know what a hot seat is?
Yeah.
Having one of you guys that feels comfortable with it come up for a few minutes, or even from where you're sitting. I don't need to do like face-to-face here. I'd like to be closer to you, though, so I might ask you to come up closer. Who's up for that? Who's the chair? Oh, good. We got some guys. What's your name?
Ed.
Ed. Everybody say, hey, Ed. Welcome, Ed. It's like an AA meeting. I'm Ed. I learned takeoff. I don't know. Okay, you can face me. Or relax, chill against the wall. Give me a kind of like a quick rundown of what you think the problem is.
If I approach a girl I like and I get into conversation, I tend to sometimes run out of things to say and feel like a little bit uptight. And then it kind of like fucks me up with like getting that vibe going and continuing the vibe and like being more playful.
And you want to pull out that teasing vibe. You want to be able to pull that out.
Right.
How have you done it in the past? Let me ask you that.
Have I done it in the past?
Yeah.
Usually just naturally. It comes naturally, like when I'm in a good mood. Mm-hmm. If a girl kind of gives me the indication that she's like,
she's into it?
She's into it. Like, she's smiling. I can kind of like go back and forth with her. But if it's like me just trying to initiate it right off the bat, sometimes I feel like I'm, you know, going into like territory that might backfire on me.
Right, and then she what? What would happen if it backfired?
Then she'd probably just like, well, the worst thing would be like she'd just like turn away or like throw a drink in my face.
The essence of it is the emotion that she rejects you. She doesn't into you, and you don't get the check and all that. Can you think of a specific situation where this has actually happened, or does it just happen frequently enough, or what? Do you have a specific situation?
I don't think I have a specific situation. I don't think I have a specific situation where it's happened to me where it's like backfired. Mm-hmm. It's more, usually it relates to like a level of like beauty or hotness or how attracted I am to the girl.
Okay. The hotness level makes it more anxiety.
The more anxiety it's like with trying to tease, like right off the bat. Like,
okay.
Like, it's like, because they usually just like don't even like give you that signal. Like, they want to be
Okay. Yeah. Have you ever had, I mean, what happens when a woman teases you first? Do you feel like it's game on and I can do it? Or do you feel like it's still like, oh, I got to be careful how I tread this water?
I think I feel like it's like I'm almost given permission to like do it. So I do.
So you do. You assume that that's like an okay sign.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to tell you what obviously that can do to an interaction, because it's waiting for when she does, she's taking the lead. When you're waiting for her to do it and then you follow up and start doing it after her, she senses I initiated that, yep. Which is weird to a woman. It's always weird to a woman for that. You know, that's just, I'm not trying to say, oh, you're doing this wrong. That's just what happens. And in psychology with women, the attraction is built by you taking the lead and being the man.
Right.
What do you think, let me just ask you this. I know it's like a duh question. You're going to be like, oh, that's why I'm up here. I want to know. What do you think you should be doing?
I think I should be initiating it, first of all.
Should be initiating it.
And doing it in a playful way that builds attraction.
Okay. In a playful, fun way that's not cruel or neg-hit type.
It's not like nagging or like not to the point where I'm like going to hurt her feelings or something, but it's just kind of like fun and playful.
Mm-hmm,
I got the idea of it. It's just sometimes like getting into that groove is a little bit, like I don't feel like congruent with what I'm saying. I feel like a little bit like nervous, but I'm saying it.
It's techniquey. So, it's like not you.
Right.
Do you tease anybody else in the rest of your life?
Yeah, I mean, I used to tease like my cousins, like my girl friends and stuff, and it was like
Okay. Totally
natural as a little kid. Like,
okay.
I felt totally, you know, like uninhibited by it. But as I got older, I don't know what happened.
Okay.
You know, in my head. You know.
And you need to get back into that swing. That's part of what my solution will be for you, is getting you into a situation where there's no outcome riding on it, right? Because when there's something to lose, you're always going to feel the pressure to perform.
Yeah.
So putting yourself back in situations where you can just get in the habit of teasing. Because teasing is a very close cousin to the ball busting that I was talking about, as we do in Italian families and the whole, you know, what I make you laugh, you know, that
right. Sudden
need to become serious. Now you're like, it's almost like you're playing a part, and if you don't feel that part, and if you don't feel congruent, yeah, it's going to throw you off big time. Put yourself back in situations where you can interact with other people like that. Do it at work. Do you get interaction with a lot of people at work?
Yeah, they're usually sort of like, you know, combative.
Combative?
So I work as a trader, so I'm usually...
Oh, dude.
Like, yeah,
and then you've got...
Faces. People are in my face yelling all day, so...
So, do you think you could pull it out there?
Yeah.
Okay, start doing it there a little bit.
Okay.
Because that's, I mean, you're talking about a combative environment that probably is way above what it is in pickup and talking to a woman, right?
Much
higher.
Exponential degree.
And with emotional engine. And it brings out a different energy. I've seen guys, I had worked on it, we had a trading floor in San Francisco, and I've seen those guys work. Yeah, it's high energy and very amped.
It's just emotional, there's anger, because you're yelling, and it's building up a lot of emotion, so there's times where you're just like, you lose it, it's just like... So I have no problem with that type of thing.
But right.
Sometimes it's just like the smoothness aspect of...
Okay, so there's one note.
That's where I feel like that.
Get back into the habit of doing it regularly enough that you're not like doing something cold. Remember the lifestyle thing? What you do consistently becomes part of your identity. You should be doing this other places, not just with women. The next thing is to find a safe place that you can tease women with and use it as, if she responds negatively to this tease, she's out. Because that's just like, I can't believe you responded negatively to that. You see the difference there in the thinking between that and, oh my God, what if I tease her and she doesn't respond well to me?
Yeah.
There's two sides of the same coin. You need to take back the side that says, I control that. So what I do, and I do this a lot, is I use teasing as an element of qualification criteria. And never tease, so here's some rules about teasing. Don't tease physical things about a woman. Never tease her about the way she, the things she can't help. What a nose you've got. Whoa. Buzzer could hang on that bad boy. You know, none of that stuff. Don't joke about her hair color and the roots and all that, you know, that neg hit stuff. Tease about those things that are playful. Like the purse one that, you know, has been done to death. Honestly, it's still fun. I love teasing women when I see them with their phones. There's the one of, you know, where you walk up to any woman with a phone, by the way, real easy way to open her is just, so has he called back yet? Just say that to her. So has he called back yet? That's a great way to open any woman that's just holding a cell phone. And she'd be like, what? No. Tease about physical objects. Don't tease, again, go back to what I said before. When you compliment, you don't want to compliment her on her physical appearance, but what she's wearing is better because it's what she chose. Teasing her on it, again, you have to become more sensitive again because it's what she chose. This is, by the way, guys, when you talk about image and what we're wearing, I know I'm getting off on little tangents here, but I feel like they're helpful. your image, what you wear, you chose. So women do judge you by that. The whole shoes thing, the belt and all that, and being coordinated in some way. She knows that the way you went out today, you chose that. You chose this. You chose that. So there is a little bit of a decision element. Guys don't think about it like that. We're just like, oh, I had some clothes, I put them on, I walked out. You know, I didn't really think about it that much. So that's why we have to put a little bit more thought into fashion and whatnot. So there's two steps. Number one is you got to be doing it more in your regular life. You got to be doing it as part of who you, you know, your stuff. Do it to your family, because families can do it better. You know, they'll feed it back to you, and you'll get that going, right? Do you know some people in your family who can do that too?
Yeah, there's a few.
Okay, so you should. And you can, like, revive that with your cousins. I don't know. I do it now, too, with my cousins. And then the other is, find a way that you take back control of that teasing so that you're the one making a decision based on it, not her. So if she does respond negatively to, my God, that phone, it looks like a computer. What are you doing? And she's like, that tells me, bitch, why would I ever want to talk to that one? I mean, she, thank you. Oh, thanks for doing that. Okay, let me find another chick worthwhile to talk to. I mean, this isn't just a mind game. This is really the way you have to program yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because right now, your frame of mind is always coming from the, what will she do or think about me? What decisions will she make about me? You're the receiver, you're the victim. Instead, you turn this around into, you're the owner. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Does that help?
Yeah.
Cool, man. Yes. All right.
Thanks.
Give him a round of applause. Since you're going. You should have an ego wall in your house. This is a place where you put every plaque, trophy, certificate, whatever has made you the man you are or the man you want to be, up on the wall. I've got one in my house, got all my martial arts certificates. Picture of me at the temple with our grandmaster, the Shaolin Temple. That was very cool. Picture of me on stage when I got my last black belt. Things like that. Just stuff that you look at every time and you're like, yeah, fuck yeah. It sinks in. Even when you don't see it, you see it. I write on my mirror a lot in marker. I take a dry erase marker, put it in your bathroom. When you have epiphanies, stuff that will just come to you and they only mean stuff to you, put them on your mirror. I love it when women see it because then they get a whole new, they see that I'm definitely different. I'm definitely different. Three simple short-term goals. Three simple short-term goals that you can put into effect this week. Simple and short-term. Short-term meaning about a week. Simple meaning they're one step, they don't take much to do. And it's an immediate accomplishment. List of qualifications for women, we talked about that before. You gotta know what you won't take or accept from a woman. You gotta know what it is you're looking for. Meditate daily. I just can't really get away from that one. It's really important because it gives you a focal point of your day and a focal point for your life. It's like rituals in the morning. I talked about that. Have a morning ritual. Those things you can come back to and repeat will give you grounding. You'll always feel grounded. Constantly bombard yourself with images of yourself in positive places. Tricks of the trade. I talked about a journal. You should have a journal, not necessarily to review, but at least to get your thoughts out of your head and onto paper. I really like writing shit on paper that like bugs me and then destroying that paper. Get into a martial arts program. Every guy should at least get into a self-defense program. It doesn't have to be anything complicated. I'm a big fan of, a lot of guys, we have this thing called Buddha Head, where they are all about, no, jiu-jitsu is the best. No, Kenpo is the best. You know, we get all that shit. Get into a martial arts program. Krav Maga is a great way to get started because it's very simple, easy to learn, practical. Krav, K-R-A-V, M-A-G-A, Maga. It's Israeli self-defense. It's often taught for military. Pardon me? I bring it into what I teach. I try and make what I teach a hybrid of effectiveness. All right? Get off the computer and stop watching so much television. It's kind of another one of those does. I hate repeating it, but it really is important. A lot of guys get really computer crazy because it's logical. We can control it. It's got an on-off switch. Not like a chick, unless you count her nipples. Get off the computer, seriously. I find it hard to do. I mean, I'm a big fan of my PS3 these days, but you gotta do it. The quality of your life is the people around you, not the machines. A lot of information here, all right? So what I want you to do, and John and I are both gonna talk about this a little bit about next steps, but I wanna share this one with you, is you've got a lot of information in your head right now, right? Everybody's chuckling like, yeah, no shit. You gotta have an effective way of using it now. whether you're gonna, you know, go into a program with John, which I recommend, or a program with me about Inner Game, any of that stuff, that's a first step. But you need to take a break, a little bit of a break after this, of a couple days where you just relax and don't think about this shit. Let it just kind of like calm down in your head, all right? Because you got a lot of stuff, but don't let your excitement get lost in that process. Wednesday, come back to your notes, take a look at them, and pick out one thing that stood out the most that was like an action item, something you can do right now. You might even know what that is right now, and that's fine. Circle it, and you can just look at it again on Wednesday and start doing it. I teach something called Chin Na, which is related to jujitsu. It's the art, and it means to seize and control. I love that phrase, to seize and control. You should be seizing and controlling your next step. The most important thing is the fast action you can take after you get out of here. The fastest thing you can do right away is the most important thing to be done. Whether it's go out and approach a woman, maybe it's not it. I mean, I'm just throwing that out. Whatever it is, pick it out, make it your focus. Now, I wish that we could all, like John and I could just like spend weeks and weeks and weeks and work with every one of you guys and show you all the great stuff we have to show you, but we can't. Because I got my start a lot like this, I didn't do a lot of seminars, but I did do a lot of learning from other gurus too. One of the best ways to put your best foot forward is to assure that you have one thing to make sure that you take action. Can you guess what that might be? Excellent. Right off the bat, that's the most important thing you can have is accountability to somebody. It's really easy when it's just you to let yourself off the hook, right? Accountability is about who makes you do what you know you should do. I can give you action items all day long, and if you won't do them, so what, right? There is a way for you to get the accountability and guidance. I have some programs that I wanted to throw for you guys. I'm not gonna do like a hard sell here, so relax. I have some programs that I give to guys that I have one in particular that I was really hesitant about even talking to you about. It's only for guys that are like totally serious. You got to come up and talk to me and you got to sell me that you really want it. Because honestly, I don't have the time to teach guys this. I only had one slot for it this year and I didn't have the slot, but my assistant Jen said I didn't have as much re-coaching to do. So I had the time free up. So I'm going to offer it as an option. Because accountability, like I said, it's the most important thing. When you walk out of here, there's a lot of you that are going to realize that, I don't know. I mean, I can do some of the smaller things, but I'm going to still need guidance. We can't get it all to you. The thing I'm talking about is I've got a platinum coaching program. Real quick, it's what I usually charge like $10,000 for. Okay? If that shocks you, okay. I've actually spent much more than that on my, I make it a point to spend $10,000 a year. And you know what? It's not going to be for everybody in here. As a matter of fact, it's probably not for most of you. And that's okay. Like I said, I'm not even sure I'm going to offer it. That is three payments of like $29.97, which works out to be about $7,900. Kelly's just passing out a sheet so you guys can see these on paper and understand what they are. Okay, now that is what I call my wingman will thing. Maybe your wingman will. You need a partner and you need a mentor to guide you. You need somebody to help you through some of these steps. And I'm talking about Inner Game stuff here, okay, guys? I'm not a boot camp guy. I don't do boot camps anymore. I don't take guys out. I will take guys out one-on-one, maybe, but it's not part of the same reasons that John doesn't do it. I don't want you to believe that just me taking you out into a bar for a weekend is going to make a significant difference in your love life, because it ain't. Honestly, that's where I think most guys end up hurting themselves more. Some guys can get some help from it, but not usually. That's Wingman Will. He needs a guy that really does it for him. Complete guidance and feedback, total hands-on. I practically do everything but the approach for you, okay? So you gotta really put something into this, but it's gonna save you time. Ultimate Inner Game coaching, this is more reasonable and this is the one I'm more amenable to doing, is Mentor Mike. He has the occasional hang-up, the occasional sticking point, and he wants to get the perception, like I've given you guys here today, about what it is that's probably not working. That one step that you could take to kind of fix it. Does that make sense? I used the analogy yesterday of being on the step in a theater, and you know how they light the steps? And you know, if you're really short-sighted, you could probably only see at least the next step. You probably can't see all those top steps, but you can see the next step in front of you and you can get your foot on that. That's what I'm talking about here, is helping you find those steps, the next step, and get you through that breaking point so that you can keep moving. That coaching program is much more Economical for guys, that's $797. It's a 3-month program. Or you can do a 3 payments of $297. And then I have what I call the DIY Dan. DIY Dan, he doesn't need any hand-holding. When I give something to him, he runs with it. All he needs is the right stuff. The right stuff to make the right decisions about what he's doing with his inner game. Okay? That's the least, I guess we're going to call them expensive. I don't think in terms of expense because you get what you pay for. That one is $257. It's all 3 payments of $97. I will basically get you the best programs for your inner game, guaranteed, I think, because I put them together and this is stuff that I use, okay? Now the Platinum Coaching, just to go back on this a bit, the Platinum Coaching also includes every single one of my programs that I ever that I sell, which is The Seduction Method, Dating Black Book, Get a Girlfriend Fast, Power Social Skills, Secrets of the Alpha Man, I'll Approach Women Now. I got a lot of shit, yes, I know. Conversation and Persuasion, Inner Game, Alpha Masculinity. I talk about the stuff that not a lot of guys in the pickup community talk about on purpose, because I think that's my benefit for guys. John gives fucking outstanding advice on here's what you can say. I give outstanding advice on here's how you can feel like you can say that. Does that make sense? It's really a simple equation. That's the value I try to give to guys. So the first program, the 10K one that I'm bringing down significantly because I just happen to have this one opportunity and I was really hesitant about putting it out in front of you. The second one is much more amenable. Again, I need to talk to you first about it. I need to know you're coachable. If you're gonna do anything in life, you gotta be coachable. Some people just aren't coachable. I've had guys come into the dojo where I'm like, you know, I really think you should work with that person. Because I know they're not coachable. I'm not gonna tell them you're not coachable, but I've got other people that are just gonna like, they're gonna ignore the fact they're not coachable and they'll just let them do their own thing off on the side of the class and think they know everything. But obviously you're coachable because you're here. So the Ultimate Inner Game Coaching is 3 months of very focused attention. You get group calls as well as some individual calls. So you get very specific feedback, like I did with a gentleman on stage here, that you can then get past the things that are specific to you. Because it's hard to be personal. I mean, we try and give you guys Q&A like this, and we can't always get everything you need, but we do our best. So if you feel like you want that, that's great. And then the home study, it's for the guy that just wants the info and is going to take it and run with it. The presentation, by all means, is not complete. We still have more to go. I want you to stick around for that. Let me give you the URL of the presentation for what I've taught you guys this whole weekend, because everybody's asking about that. When do I get the slides? carloszuma.com. Everybody got that? /2010 You go to that, it's immediately going to pull up the PDF of this, so all you got to do is save it. I didn't put any sales page there. I'm not tricking you into joining my mailing list or any of that. I really hope you do, but you guys can just get this presentation, all the slides, all my notes. If I said anything offensive, fuck it. You expect me to apologize? I would wait because the version that's up there, I've been messing around with a little bit, so it doesn't have everything in it. You can get it now, and that's no big deal, but wait in a week and do it again because I might have put up some changes that you could benefit from. I did some tweaking.
Yeah, so cool. So now this is just like a Q&A. We want to open it up for questions on anything about this event or, you know, specific situations, anything like that. This is just kind of an all-over Q&A. It's our last session of the event, so anything that you're kind of need more information on, need more clarity, now's the time to ask.
Cool.
Okay.
How do you reject a girl?
How do you reject a girl?
Yeah.
Like, what's the situation?
But you know, you're out. This is actually a question that came up. Carlos earlier today.
How do you say it? What's the explanation?
Are we talking about like a girl who approaches you, or are we talking about like a girl you went on a bad date with?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's different ways.
True. I'm thinking more like, you know, when you're out, just out socially.
Just excuse yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you don't tell her, don't make it a point like, I have to make this girl feel why I don't like her. It's not a self-proving incident. It's an inner criteria for you to decide, I can walk away. You can walk away at any time. Don't make it a big deal, right? I used to do that though early on when I was in my mad mode. You know, you had to like prove a point and be like, you know what, you're kind of bitchy. I don't know if I want to talk to you anymore. And I'd have to say that, right? That's not cool. That was just me being angry. Eventually, you just let that shit go.
You just, hey, you know, it's really nice to meet you, but I need to go get back to my friends.
Yeah. Very simple.
Next question.
What are some good, like, day two take
for me? I only go on one date, so... I've been going on the same date for 6 years. I don't tell girls what it's going to be. I always just tell them it's a surprise. And then the surprise is a bar hop, which is a nice way of saying we go to two different places and have drinks. I'll be like, you know, there's some bars that live. I always, like, you have to understand that, like, this goes into, like, lifestyle, though, right? Like, I specifically move to places where I have bars walking distance from my house. Like, I have not lived anywhere where there aren't bars walking distance within 3 or 4 blocks of my house for 6 years. Because I'm going on the same date for 6 years, so I want to make sure that I have my setup. Like, when I was looking at places when I was moving out here, I basically figured out what bars I wanted to do day twos at based on where the cheaper drinks were and what drink specials they had, and then I figured out areas I wanted to live in from that. So, I will always take care of my logistics, right? So, for me, I meet the girl at my house, I forget my wallet every time I go out to meet her, and I'm like, oh my god, I forgot my wallet, come in real quick while I get it, just so she can see my place, and like I can usher her out, she sees that I'm not going to try to, you know, take advantage of her when she's in my house. Then I just take them to the bar, and then we, the thing with dates, I would just say, is you want to have at least 2 to 3 venues. Multiple venues are a time distortion effect, which makes the girls feel like they've known you longer. So if you're going to go on a date, and you're going to spend, you know, 4 hours together, you can spend 4 hours in one place, and the girl feel like she's known you for 4 hours, or you can go 2 or 3 places and spend an hour each time there, and she'll feel like she's known you a lot longer.
Yeah, multiple venues I highly encourage too. I always tell guys, you want some more ideas kind of on the, just off the bar and club, or the bar type thing. I like doing arcades. I get a shitload of quarters or tokens, I take them to arcades because it's interactive. You know, get her to do Dance Dance Revolution or whatever that stuff is. I don't know if you're into that, but arcades are fun because high energy, interactivity. Whatever you do, it's interactive. It has to be interactive. You know, don't let the date be the focus. The date doesn't mean anything. It's the fact that she's out with you somewhere, right? You've got to be building attraction. You've got to be doing the things that you need to be done. So places to go can be irrelevant. In San Francisco, let's face it, there's just a ton of shit to do. More than enough. And I know that's unfair for some guys that may not live in that. Raise your hand if you live in LA. Most of you guys? Okay. And I know it's up in San Francisco, and I know they have it down here as Amoeba Records. It's a funky little CD place. I love going in there. Great to hear her music tastes and what she likes, what she doesn't. Go to the movie section. Places like that where you can interact, shop. Chicks dig that. You know? Right. The three simple, quick ones?
Yeah.
Right.
And all that. And I guess there's macro goals, micro goals, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
What are you talking about as far as, you know, that thing? Because I usually start at the top of the period that I'm trying to work on.
If you do that, like a lot of guys do this, they blow themselves out by choosing a macro goal that is in line kind of what they think they want, but it changes. So you got to be flexible with whatever goals you set. Goals are not written in stone. The second you determine that a goal is not, like, it's either not, you're not getting towards it, or there's some real impasse here, or it's not aligned with you, drop it. Fucking drop it and choose something new, or at least get back on the path. So it goes back to, yeah, I want to be like, I did this literally on an index card. I wrote down the 10 things I wanted to do in 10 years. I did 9 out of the 10 in like 5 years. It's true. I never looked at the card once. That was the weird ass thing. And I didn't believe it until somebody told me that that would work. And I did it. And I'm like, wow. When I said I wanted to be a black belt, I didn't say what style. I didn't get too specific. I just knew the general direction of that goal. That's where you don't get specific. You get specific on the how do I get started and get going on it. Does that help a little bit?
Well, I guess maybe I'm just taking on more global things and not realizing that my efforts are actually resulting.
Well, it sounds like you don't have like a series of steps to get you from where you're at to where you want to go. It's great to have the goal of I want to get a girlfriend, but what needs to happen in order for you to get a girlfriend, right? You probably need to date, I don't know, some amount of women. You probably need to meet some amount of women to get that amount of dates. You probably need to you know, find out ways to meet these types of women and then actually go and do it. There's a lot of steps backwards that you could work back from, whatever your macro goals are. Like, I think you're on the right track.
Yeah.
You're not doing the little steps in between. You're forgetting about the stairs of success and how things build upon themselves. You want to just kind of like jump up to the top. So you want to maybe go backwards and think about what would need to happen in order for this to be achieved and what the actual steps to success would be.
You have to reverse engineer it, basically. You know, you get the big thought in mind, reverse engineer it down to the little nitty gritty. Don't get too granular, but yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
How do you break things off after the second date?
Are you feeling gonna be different?
That's the many ways.
I'm really like I make jokes about it, but like I don't have any family. Like I am a pretty emotionally like distant person. Like it's hard to get really close to me. So for me, like I'm like a super cold soldier. Like I just tell girls exactly what I'm thinking. When I'm done with them, like when they call or text, I'm like, hey, you know, like it was fun what we had or whatever, but I really just don't think this is gonna work, so I don't think we should see each other anymore. They'll be like, well, we went on one day. I'll be like, yeah, but still.
And what do you advise to others?
What? I mean, if you can't do that, then you wanna send hints, right? It's always better to like let the girl decide to cut it off than to kind of do it yourself. Just because, you know, like you have the variables when you do it yourself if they get mad and smash your car windows or something. So I would say if you don't want to see a girl again, the first thing is if you want to see a girl again after you sleep with her, the next day call or text her. If you don't want to see her again, don't call or text her. That's the first thing. Because that sends a real clear sign. You can ask any female friend you have about that. That sends a very clear message. The second thing is maybe ignore like calls or texts for a day or two and see if they keep coming, right? And then, you know, if worse comes to worse and the girl like keeps pursuing, then you have to be like, you know, but like at this particular time, like I'm not really interested in dating anyone seriously. So I think you're really awesome. I'd like for us to be friends, but I don't think it's gonna work romantically. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a demonstration on body positioning? Seduction roadmap for the right way to have instant keynote, or you know that move that you talked about with the feet,
right.
The hips thing, is that there? Or
that's in the seduction roadmap in the Masters Academy, which is a 16-week video thing. I mean, I can just show you what I'm talking about already, real quick. But what I'm talking about is the concept of cutting it, right? So like, I'm just using it. All right. So like, most guys when they want to get closer to a girl, they barrel in like this. They take a big step, uncomfortable, creepy, right? What we want to do instead is we want to use footwork. Like I don't know, anyone ever play basketball? Like, you know how to like set up a jab step? You're basically going to do a jab step, right? So like, you're going to take a jab step here, keep talking. You want to ideally avert attention other place. We want to disguise this move in where we're cutting space. We call this cutting space, right? Because if I'm here, I can touch here, but I want to get closer so I can be more touching. Right, so while I'm talking, like blah, 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 oh my god, that guy's really creepy. I just bring my back foot to my second foot. Now I've cut the space in a completely normal, natural way. You don't even have a reaction to it when you do this in real life. So it's basically just a small step, keep talking, divert the attention that way, and then close the distance.
There's a lot of them.
It's a tough one. Leading conversations.
Yeah.
Learning how to lead a conversation is probably the most important social skill, I would say.
Do you need that through like storytelling and stuff like that?
I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do it. Like, basically, it's just controlling where the conversation goes, making sure that it stays on subjects that you're good at talking about, doesn't go onto subjects that can get you in trouble. Like, bringing it back. Like, when you're talking to people, like, they're going to be tangents, right? Like, one of the problems with routine-based pickup is that you don't ever really have a chance to spit a monologue at a girl, like, because they're going to be saying things back, right? So part of conversational control is just when you get thrown off on a tangent or the girl, you know, brings up something that's not really helpful to you, you're able to suck the conversation back to where you want it to go. So, I mean, it's things like cutting threads, it's things like, you know, using transitions, it's things like being able to have a variety of both deep, ability to go deep on subjects, right, deep rapport and like get to emotional levels, and also the ability to talk on a wide variety of subjects. So it's a pretty detailed skill, but that's
that's probably the most important social skill.
And it's hard too, because everything like offshoots into something else. Like if I was going to say it from more of a broader perspective outside of pickup, I'd say the understanding of the friendship process and being able to create that connection quickly,
yeah.
Which is actually, it's a microcosm of everything we teach, but it's a really important skill. It just kind of distills everything down to the basics. And I'm not going to be able to go through that all right now.
No, I'm asking, do any of your programs help you with
that? Yeah, actually the most either Alpha Conversation and Persuasion and the most recent one, actually I talk about in the Bad Boy Formula.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, Carlos just made a really good point. Like it's, we take for granted the ability to make friends, because most of you have probably had your friends since you were in like high school and college or like work, but you've had like a lot of exposure to your friends, and you made friends when there was like a high concentration of time you spent together. Like, making new friends is definitely a process. It's definitely something that most people don't know how to do.
And especially guys, as we get older, we get bad at it. And we end up being very isolated because of it. Women stay in a good social circle, guys don't. That's why part of the reason, supposedly, we die earlier and have so many more problems, we don't know how to make friends the same way, as quickly. It's a big skill.
Negative self-perceptions that we in our minds know are irrational, but from a heart-centered place we still buy into. Any advice on how to?
Example.
I've got obviously cosmetically imperfect eyes. I've convinced myself this is reason to hold myself back.
I can't even tell. I've seen you all weekend, and I was like, "What is he talking about?"
Well, actually, guys, anyway. Be that as it may, or another example, say somebody walks with a limp or has,
Right, you know the conscious thing that it shouldn't hold you back, but somewhere inside you feel like it does hold you back. Is that what you're saying? How do you get past that?
Well, the case in point is there, several years ago, there was, I was hanging out with a bunch of friends, and like the news was on or something, someone came on, but a very obvious case of the same condition I have, and all my friends like, oh my god, look at her, hey, you're a freak, and this and that, and I was like, oh my god, that's how people will perceive me if they discover this secret, and so, I'm spilling my guts, that's pretty cool, be that as it may, up here I know that it's irrational for me to hold myself back and to deny myself the things in life that I want because of it. But convincing myself, as I say, from a heart-centered place has been more of a struggle. So any advice on how to sort of circumvent the BS factors that we convince ourselves of so that we can get to that place that we want to be?
I feel like I've touched on that quite a bit in some of the smaller things I've talked about.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. The first thing you've done is right. You recognized it. Mm-hmm. That's something that a lot of guys never even do. The second thing is, I don't like the therapeutic process of dwelling on the why. You just get out and do shit that obviates the whole reason why, right? So if you have something like that that's intellectual, that's holding you back, that's rational, you do something else that's emotional that just doesn't make that count anymore. It's bullshit. No offense, the eye thing. Who cares? I didn't notice it either. He was squinting. I was like, I don't see it. So you let it go. You go out and get the success that doesn't make that matter. I'm trying to.
Well, I look at a guy like, Sean Stevenson. Do most of you guys know who he is?
Yeah.
He's the guru who's like 3 feet tall. He had brittle bone disease. He's wheelchair bound and all this and that. No one could probably have blamed him for, hiding in his place, being pissed off at the world and not doing a whole lot with his life. Instead, he got his master's in, psychology and this, that, and the other. So, that comparison, I look at that.
Yeah, exactly. You can always look at something like that. You can always create a frame of comparison that gives you perspective. Remember we talked about perspective, being able to see it from the outside and see, because no matter what you think, how bad you think your shit is, somebody's got it 10,000 times fucked up worse. Always, 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 always. And you don't know it and you don't want to see it because you want to believe that you're unique, you're special, you're special to you, but in the real grand scheme of things, we're all very much alike, very much dishearteningly similar. So don't worry about that. That's not what's important. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, you gotta just kind of, accept your flaws, right? It might even make you more comfortable to, feature it early on. I'm pretty fucking crazy. I hope that's been, expanded on. One of the first things I tell girls is that I'm really crazy and that this is probably going to be weird and I have a weird effect on women, so don't get sucked in, right? I mean, you can do the same thing. I mean, like, you can turn it into something you could feature. You know, I mean, like, I would bring it up early on and just kind of use it as a disqualifier or something. Like, that would be...
That's exactly what I would say.
Like, I would just be like, look, like, this is never going to work out because, like, I have these eyes and, like, it's going to be hard for me to squint at you and stuff, so this is not going to work. Like,
but your eyes are cute. And I want the color.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, that's like, I have some scars on my face from where Kyle Baker scratched me in eighth grade basketball game. Yes, I remember exactly who it was.
You ready for payback?
Yeah, you should. Payback is I lit him up for like 40 points. But, I mean, like, these things are like things you deal with. Everyone has like our fucked up shit, right? Like, it's, you can always look at what could be better in your life or like what would be different or like how it's not fair, and like you can be a victim, but like being a victim, fuck that noise. Mm-hmm.
There's an infinite number of things you're not. You know, you can spend the rest of your life trying that shit. Remember the displaying vulnerability thing I talked about? Take the vulnerability, make it an asset. That's how you get past that shit, like the bald thing. You like this shine? I got it nice and polished for you, you know.
Future it, you know?
Yeah, put it out there.
The more you talk about the things you're like insecure with, the more you take their power away. Like, our secrets and our like secret pain and all that stuff, like there's a reason I tell you guys I tried to kill myself at every boot camp, because it makes me more comfortable with the whole situation. Like, I can be honest about it. It's not some like secret thing where it was like, oh yeah, one time I like tried to kill myself because I was unhappy even though like, I laid a lot. Like, feature it, like your stuff. I mean, I went and got a tattoo over the scar, to keep it in my mind, you know. We all have our things, so it's a matter of kind of accepting them and taking their power away, right? It's kind of like the horror movie effect, right? Like, things are much scarier when we ignore them, right? Like, any problem you have, the more you ignore it, the more it builds itself up and becomes scarier and scarier and harder to deal with. The more you just confront it early on, and it can suck, but it takes its power away, and after a while, you don't even think about it anymore.
Yeah. How do you bring this whole dynamic into, let's say, a speed dating situation where you have a limited amount of time to develop the attraction and qualification?
Oh, you know, the one thing I did all the time, that's where I came up with the whole power questions concept, was speed dating. It was for that. Because everything's assumed in there. Everything's kind of laid out. It's like you're falling into your slots. You know what I mean? Everybody knows what the dynamic is. The woman's got to accept the approach because it's all paid for. You know what I'm saying? So when you're doing this, first of all, I like to emphasize this is a great, great Petri dish test laboratory for doing any kind of material you want. I would talk to this one woman and say this. I go to the next woman that's sitting right next to her and say the exact same thing, because she's talking to the next guy, she doesn't even notice it. I just keep doing the same thing and seeing how she's responding to it. That's where I came up with the idea of the power questions. So one night all I did was I asked every single woman, so what are you doing to make the world a better place? I mean, I just went ballsy for the wall right like that in, and every single woman, and slam dunk, almost every woman checked me off on her card. It was like magic. No, it wasn't. It was just, you know, being different than the rest of the other guys and just trying shit out. You gotta have a little bit more of a charged angle, but yeah, it's not hard. It's, believe me, winning the speed dating game, fucking easy.
Yeah, totally.
The thing with speed dating also is like, you want to convey, and internet dating, both of these, you want to convey that you're not taking it too seriously. Because when you come into it like way too serious on the internet or at speed dating, you just look desperate. So you want to just be like when I do speed dating, like I will wear like ridiculous outfits and like say the most random things, because I want to really make it clear that I don't need speed dating to meet women.
Yeah.
Like, that's something you really have to convey, is that you're doing this for fun, or you're doing it like just to entertain yourself. You're not doing this because you desperately need to meet women. That's a big part of succeeding at speed dating.
Isn't that just in general meeting women?
In speed dating, you have to like go out of your way, like. If you approach a woman like in a cold approach, or like you're introduced and you're like hitting on her, you don't have to explain that you're just like doing this for fun. In speed dating and on the internet, you have to actually go out of your way to explain that you're not, that you're just doing this for fun.
Because you took a lot of deliberate steps to get there, right? You paid for it, you signed up for it, you're putting some hope into it, is what you know.
Yeah. What you don't want is the girl thinking this guy has to go to speed dating in order to get dates, because that turns off your pre-selection. That just shows that like you're a desperate guy and you don't have women in your life, you don't have ways to meet women other than this kind of gimmicky thing.
I think it was the cold approach was like, should be like one third of your way of meeting girls, one the other way.
Internet, social circles, classes, meetup.com events, being set up by friends.
What's a good resource for social circles? That could be a
Well, I mean, there's not, unfortunately, there's not like a good resource on Social Circle like building out there. I don't think. I mean, I don't know one. You know, maybe you do.
Actually, some YML systems have a Social Circle.
Yeah, that's terrible. I sat through it. Thumbs down.
Okay.
You don't have one on your blog or?
I don't really like. I don't really teach like a Social Circle method. Because I think. Most people are not, like, the amount of time it takes to build a Social Circle from scratch, most people are not going to do it, so I just kind of, I think it's not really the best topic for, like, maybe putting a product on. In terms of Social Circle, basically, you just want to start by getting people to hang out with you, right? Like, the first step to getting a Social Circle is getting people to hang out with you, so don't be too picky, right? Like, the problem occurs in Social Circle when guys are like, I only want a Social Circle of nines and rich guys, like, that's all I want to hang out with. I'm like, yeah, everybody wants to hang out with that, right? You're not, that's like saying, like, I'd like to bang Candace Swenable. I'm like, yeah, of course you would. Thank you for sharing.
Like, what you were talking about the shoulders being relaxed, how does that look? How can I do that? This is bad. This is normal.
Like, it's normal. Body language is just...
I remember you saying something about it being back. More
I mean, like, you want more, like, back and relaxed, like, here, as opposed to, like, here.
Lunch,
you want to slump and lunch,
okay.
But, like, it's not that extreme. Like, it's basic, like, normal body language should just look comfortable.
For you, it's
very subtle. It's very subtle. It's not, it's not, like, overt military.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Oh, okay. Because I was like, I don't know, but you're fine.
You have perfectly fine body language.
Yeah. Stop thinking about your body language.
Right.
Get out of your head.
Okay, so one more is
I
don't know if you've heard of the gunslinger walk or something where it goes like.
Oh, where you're supposed to like walk with your legs like really wide and stuff.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
weird.
No, like walk with your heels.
I mean, like I will say,
I
will say, like, if you want to have a rhythm to walk, and like you also want to make sure that you keep your head up straight, like. But I mean, that's more just like not rocking in like a robotic fashion and like anything like that. Like, you don't want to super like emphasize it.
If you leave with your shoes, I'm not gonna tear my shoes up.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, my shoes is gone. I'm like,
you lead with the hips, right? It's just a more sexual motion that you lead with your hips first, so you always want to lead with your hips. But other than that,
I talk about like being.
You have a question up front?
Actually, I just wanted to comment on what you said. I think that. One of the primary ways of showing masculinity, isn't it?
Like,
that's what I'm
saying. Mm-hmm.
Initiative.
Yeah. Do you agree with me on the seduction romance being
the greatest thing of all time?
That was a good example of frame control.
Yeah.
you can ask yourself any question you want.
It's like you are the frame.
George Bush used to do that all the time. Like, George W. Bush has amazing frame control. Whatever you think about his politics, he is one of the best people I've ever seen in frame control.
You set the frame, you are the frame, you do all that, and you're communicating that you're in control of your sex life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, okay, like, my whole style of, like, escalating is based on the idea that I know what a girl wants sexually more than she knows it, and I'm going to tease her and make her eventually ask me to do stuff to her. Like, that's kind of my mentality behind how I escalate. It came from me kind of being a pussy. Like, it actually came from, like, me having sexual anxiety and not wanting to escalate. So instead of, like, I didn't get good at, like, aggressive sexualization until, like, 3 years ago. So instead of what I would do, was I had this complex system that's in the seduction roadmap of like framing girls and like making them chase and making them make all of the escalations. So that's good for the most part, but I mean, you can't always, sometimes you, like, the problem is some girls are chasers and some girls are pursuees, right? Like, some girls need to chase, some girls need to be pursued. So the girl who needs to be pursued, you have to be more aggressive. The girl who like needs to chase, you need to be more hard to get, right? So my way of doing it now, like, it's balanced. Before, it was more skewed towards the girls who like needed to be chasing. Like, it was more skewed towards the girls who wanted to chase and get hard to get guys, which tend to be hotter girls in my experience. Next question.
You said the girls that like to chase guys?
Generally tend to be hotter, yeah.
The hotter girls?
Yeah. Yeah, hotter girls, like one of the big differences between like once you go above the 8.5 line, is that like you generally don't get girls who want to be pursued above 8.5, they want to chase. because they have so much selection power that they want to pick the guy who's the hardest to get and who's the biggest challenge. So that's why like jealousy works so much better on hotter girls. Like we will see this on boot camps a lot. Like a guy will be talking to like a moderately attractive girl, like a cute girl, and he'll go do like a jealousy plot line or something, and the cute girl will get really mad. But if you do it to a 9 or a 10, they get really into you. Like, and so sometimes I'll do it on boot camp, I'll demonstrate like the jealousy plot line. I'm like, no, you have to do it on that girl. Like, you can't do it. It breaks the spirit of a girl who's cute, but for a girl who's hot and for a girl who just likes to chase, it's like a challenge. It's like game on, right? She's like, oh, I'm not gonna let this bitch beat me, and then they'll actually compete. I mean, like, I've had you can cause feeding frenzies. Like, I've had many nights where like I've had girls like get into near physical altercations over me, which sounds crazy, but like it women are really competitive. Like, they may not even want to fuck you as much as they want to win. They want to beat the other girls more than they want to, like, actually get you.
That's one of the ones in that book, Why Women Have Sex.
Yeah, women are the big... No one hates women more than other women. Yeah. Women are the biggest misogynists in the world. Women hate other women. Like, I used to hate Peyton Manning and currently hate Kobe Bryant. It's a lot of hate. All right, any other questions?
Yeah. Tell me some techniques so you don't run out of things.
We talked about having those lists. That's the first big part. The second thing is like an instant word association game that I usually use. So like if I'm talking to a girl and I'm running out of things to say, I just look for something in the environment and then I try to talk about that. So like if I'm talking to you guys right now and I'm running out of things to say, I might be like, you know, I think that light's kind of like interesting because it's like a bullseye, which kind of reminds me of boobs, right? Like, how are guys supposed to like ignore boobs when they're three concentric circles, right? It draws your eye. It's kind of fucked up, right? I mean, like, that's... It'll be random. Like, the two things I would say for, like, just real quick, because, like, I have a whole CD in my interview series on how to not run out of things to say, which is, like, an hour. So just two really good techniques. One of them is the word association. The other one is just making observations. Like, just make random observations. Get in the habit of making random observations. I do this all the time. It's even one of my openers is I'll just, like, stand there and, like, I'll just point out something obvious about a girl. I'll be like, you have blonde hair. And then they'll look at me like I'm crazy, and I'll be like, I point out the obvious. It's kind of my thing. That just happened because I make random observations all the time. Like, it can be kind of annoying sometimes because like I'll be driving, like pointing things out to people. But it's just because I've trained myself to kind of always, like, there's no filter with me. Like, I don't have a filter. I've gotten rid of the social filter. If I feel like saying something, I say it. And that came through forcing myself to make observations even when they were weird. And sometimes they fall flat. Sometimes you say something that just like is not that interesting or just is, you know, kind of offensive. But that's the price you pay for getting yourself to continue to talk. The big thing with running out of things to say is you've got to give them the choice of whether or not they're going to like you. The more you talk, the more you give people a choice of whether or not they're going to like you. Like, there's this one guy I do kickboxing with, and, like, he literally talks so much. And, like, at first I kind of hated him, because I was just like, fuck, man, this guy, like, you can't say anything to this guy. You could have the most clear logical argument ever. Like, I could be like, 2 + 2 = 4, and he'd be like, no. Well, actually, like, when I lived in Germany, like, it actually was 5 if you had it, like, the right way. Like, everything he's got an answer for. And, like, I used to get really mad, because, like, afterwards I'd be trying to, like, get, like, technique questions answered. I'd be like, so when I moved my foot, and he'd be, like, just jabbering about, like, art and culture and shit. And this is what made me think, like, the more you talk, the more you, like, you give people the choice about whether or not they like you. Like, if this guy, like, just shut the fuck up, like, I probably would have liked him a lot more. But he talked a lot, and so... you get a negative reaction sometimes, but on the flip side of that, there are some people where they start talking, you like them a lot. So people are gonna dislike or like you no matter what. You might as well talk as much as you possibly can. Because A, if they don't like you, you're pissing them off and like sucking up all their airtime, and that like annoys people. And anytime you can annoy people who don't like you, that's a positive. And B, you give yourself the chance that people are gonna like you. So I mean, a lot of it's just being willing to put yourself out there and not like, we censor a lot of our thoughts. Like, I mean, at least for me, when I had problems with running out of things to say, I'd like want to say something and I'd be like, oh wait, no, that's stupid, or like, oh, I'm not sure if that's like 100% true, or I'm not sure if this is like relevant, or that might be random. You gotta cut that voice off and just say it. That's a big
I've heard it described as social liberation. You know, how liberated do you feel to express whatever you feel? I mean, what more right do you have to say about what you're thinking than anybody else? Shit, you do, just as much as anybody. Who gives you the right to? Who gives you permission? So you got to liberate yourself. You got to free yourself up from that bullshit of social pressure and, you know, thinking, wait a minute, I have, if anything, you have more, because you have more of an awareness and a better way to take it down someplace that's meaningful, right? You were doing the exercises that we did yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Those are a perfect example of how you keep conversation going. That random associations, that he does exactly what I do. I make those same weird little fucked up things. I always try and make them either around tits or sex or something like that. Because it's just fun and it's the way it goes and women like it. They do.
Be goofy, let your freak flag fly.
One of the things we haven't spent most time on is the whole concept of the wing and the game.
What?
Tips and tricks.
Wings.
That,
wings are for the weak.
Sorry.
Wings are for the weak. Having a wingman means you have weak game. Like, if you rely on your wingman, it's because you have weak game. Look, I get it, it's easier to go out when you have someone else to go out with, but in my experience, a bad wing is the worst possible thing you can add to your game on a consistent basis. Like, there are guys that I winged really great with who, you know, were really good with girls, and there were guys who were really good with girls that I winged terribly with. The thing with multiple guys is you have multiple conversational styles, you have multiple kind of moving parts where it can get messed up. It's just, it overcomplicates things.
Yeah, logistics get a lot more complicated.
It makes everything harder, unless you're approaching two sets. The only situation in which you kind of need a wing is when you're approaching a two set, because you can't isolate in a two set. You can't like leave the friend by herself. Other than that, you don't need a wing. In any other situation other than an all-girl two set, you don't need a wing.
Double bars, my question is, is there any material?
Are you decisive or are you boring?
But is there any material that you've read to become more natural at double bind?
Double binds are a pretty simple concept. It's basically just a frame control device. You're putting a person in a situation where however they answer the question, it leads to what you want. So the best example of it is I call it like reverse testing, right? So like, it's kind of a qualification thing. When I meet a girl, like I don't like party girls. If a girl goes out more than like 2-3 nights a week, I'm not interested. Like if a girl's an actress, I'm not interested. So like I'll do this stuff a lot. Like I'll be like, so you live in Hollywood, are you like an actress or a waitress? Right? And you know, basically she has to be forced into where I'm trying to send her. Same thing with are you decisive or do you suck? It's basically you're leading them to a choice. So you make whatever you want them to pick is the attractive option, and then you want to make the other option unattractive. Right? That's the key to double binds. So you put them in a situation where one option is obviously unattractive, so they pick the other one. So like my famous example is like when I lived in San Diego and I first started to discover that I hated party girls, I would ask every girl if they were a party girl, right? If they were a party girl, I'd be like, yeah, I like to party too, which is a lie that I used to tell. And if they were like, no, I'm not a party girl, I'd be like, awesome, I like girls that are a party. But either way, I was able to qualify and move the interaction forward.
That's actually to point that out, there's a thing called the magician's choice. It's the same thing. It's where you don't care which one they choose, but you're still guiding it.
Right.
All right. That's how they do those selection things with the deck, and they get you to select down to the card they wanted you to choose. Right. Same thing. It works in social interactions too.
Yeah, I mean, it can suck sometimes. That's part of the game. All right, guys, so we're going to wrap up. Thank you, first of all, for being here. There's been a lot of information this weekend. I know we've kind of overloaded you guys, so I want to remind you to small chunk things. Like Carlo said, take a couple days off, and then around Wednesday, go through everything again and start looking for the actionable items. You don't need to go through everything again to like go through all the theory, but look for the actionable items and the steps you can take right now. Like, this weekend was a really good first step for everyone. You guys all came in here, you got actionable plans, you got a lot of information on inner game and outer game, and everything you need to start the road to success. Now is where the rubber really kind of hits the road, because you won't have us for the next little bit. You know, like, you're not going to have us over your shoulder every day to, like, remind you to do your approaches or your exercises for your inner game. So now you have to take control of this and kind of keep it rolling. This is a beginning. This is not, you're not going to walk out of this room in 2 or 3 minutes and instantly be, you know, where you want to be. So it's really important that you take the steps and that you don't let this become a fantasy camp weekend. That's the problem with this. This is not entertainment. Like, I don't produce information for entertainment purposes. Like, this isn't, you know, for you to kind of laugh at the funny pickup guys or, you know, be like, oh yeah, that was really good stuff we learned, but it's not really for me. My goal in this is for all of you guys to get to the level of success that you want, whatever that is. So you're the ones in control of that. We can tell you what to do, but we can't actually make you do it. So now, in the next week or so, we'll find out, you know, who's going to make it and who's not, based on the next week. The guys who this week go out and they take actionable steps, they work on these exercises, they make inventories, they make their baseline, they do approaches, they do proactive things in their life, you're going to see the success. The guys who look at this and go, yeah, you know, I need like some time to digest this and like get back to it. Maybe next week I'll take a look at it, and next week becomes next month, and all of a sudden it's a year from now and you're coming back and you haven't learned anything.
Yeah, so fast action. Fast.
Make sure that you take the action as quickly as possible, and make sure that you kind of take some of the core understandings here about things. I think we've tried to impart a healthy and balanced perspective on this stuff, and that's really important more than anything, is integrating this into your life. I don't want your life to become pick up an inner game after this. I want you to be able to integrate all of these things that you've learned, all of these tactics, techniques, and everything into a real life, and into a life that's much more fulfilling and happy and filled with women. So thank you for being there.
Yeah, you know, I just have like one small thing to say. You know why most salesmen suck?
Why?
Because they don't believe in their product. They don't really believe in it. They don't really get behind it. Besides from the skill aspect, they just don't believe in it. I mean, if you had a product that, you know, would cure cancer, you'd be like all over that. You'd be pushing that down people's throats, right? It's a big difference there. And if you can get behind yourself and sell yourself that way, the pickup thing is no big deal. I remember one guy, and this is how it was told to me, and this is what really kind of kicked my ass in the gear once, was I was in this seminar. It was totally unrelated to picking up chicks. It was actually a business seminar of some kind. And the guy said, you know, I go into my kid's room, and he's got pictures of Michael Jordan and all these sports athletes on his wall. And I thought to myself, you know what? Crazy thought, but what if, you know, this kid has all these heroes? What if you were his hero? You know, it doesn't matter if you have a son or not, or kids or not, or if you intend to, but that should be your goal. You know, your kids should have you as your hero. Now, is that the kind of person you're trying to build? Is that the kind of lifestyle you're trying to build? Is that the kind of woman you're trying to find to have in your life to build that kind of life with? Ask yourself that question, because it's a big question. All right, so sell yourself like you really believe in the product, and the people, you know what, evangelize your life. That's really how I'd sum it up. Evangelize your life. Be like one of those pulpit speakers. It's like, yeah, I'm into it, man, you know? And I appreciate you guys.